Oscar Piastri wins the Chinese Grand Prix.
We're in for an absolute treat this season if we're going to have two McLarens duking it out and two teammates turn rivals.
If Lando and Oscar keep giving each other bloody noses, there's an opportunity for someone to pick up the pieces, and they know it. George knows it, Max knows it.
Both Ferraris have been disqualified from the Chinese Grand Prix, but I still feel Ferrari have a lot to be positive about.
Lewis Hamilton wins for Ferrari for the first time in Formula One.
I think there will be glimmers of hope here, but they're certainly not where they want to be.
Oscar Piastri made a statement in the Grand Prix, and Lewis Hamilton took his first win in red in the F1 sprint. Shanghai served up some big results, as well as some big questions. Welcome to F1 Nation. We're in the paddock outside McLaren, where the celebrations are in full flow, and so they should. They've just clinched their 50th 1-2 finish in Formula One. And with me to break down what has been a fascinating weekend of action here in Shanghai are F1 TV presenter Laura Winter and commentator Alex Jakes. A very warm welcome to you both. Let's begin by getting an overview from you about the weekend just gone. Laura.
Great stories throughout. Lewis in red winning his first ever sprint race, his first win for Ferrari. Oscar Piastri's first pole, really straightforward win. Even in his interview afterwards, he said that was my least emotional win, but probably the most complete one. You know, it seems that he's in the best form that we've seen him in so far. Certainly that's the confidence emanating from him. It sets up a fascinating situation in which McLaren may well have stolen a bit of a march, as we kind of anticipated last week and indeed in testing. And we have one win apiece for two drivers who both want to win a driver's world title. It's setting up what could be a fascinating year.
It's brewing up nicely, isn't it? Jakesy, what are your take homes?
I think Oscar was incredibly frustrated with how Melbourne played out in terms of the intervention of the rain shower, in terms of being given a team order in the first race of the year. The only answer when things are going to be so close, when your team appears to have the best car, is to turn up and take your first pole and romp off into the distance. He wasn't challenged at any point of that race. It was very, very impressive. I can see why he's satisfied. Wasn't much of a celebration, though, was there, from him? And the reason there wasn't much of a celebration is that he knows this is going to be an extreme test of a driver just in his third season, but he has a legitimate shot to win the world championship. And could we say that at the start of the weekend? He's very, very quick, proven Grand Prix winner. This is a guy who was absolutely mullered in qualifying last year against Lando Norris. 20-4, Lando is the lead car. He's out-qualified him, he's taken pole, and he's converted it pretty easily into victory. Game on at the front.
Yeah, look, it was an emphatic weekend by him. How important do you think it was to reset the balance within McLaren after what happened in Melbourne last week?
I think hugely, and especially off the back of last season, where in the latter stages, pretty much from Baku on, really, they said outright, we are biasing towards Lando Norris. Even at a point in which actually the gap between Lando and Max was only slightly bigger than the gap between Oscar and Lando, but still they lent on Lando Norris because there was a chance that he could have won that driver's title, and we were all calling for it. You need to name a number one driver. We're now in a situation where I think the number one driver will have to announce themselves, and Zach even came on the F1 TV post-race show today and said, we have two number one drivers. That's the beauty of having these two number ones. We've got two guys who can win. But he did say to us as well, he admitted that it wasn't necessarily the worst thing that Lando had to back off in the closing stages of today because of that long brake pedal issue that did become critical, because it meant they didn't have to issue any team orders. They didn't have to ensure that Lando and Oscar tangled and potentially they threw away a 1-2. And I think they may have got away with what could have been some more spicy radio messages today.
Jakesy, we've seen it in the past many times. Two number one drivers normally ends in tears, doesn't it?
It can deny you a world championship. It can blow up like it did between Rosberg and Hamilton at Mercedes. It can cause all sorts of dramas, iconic dramas, like we saw between Prost and Senna. In 1986, Williams had the best car. Piquet took half the wins. Mansell took the other half, and they managed to lose out to Alain Prost. 2007, Fernando Alonso you've got Lewis Hamilton, they managed to take the points off each other. Kimi Raikkonen sneaks in. The hope for the rest of the grid is that the McLaren drivers are going to take points off each other and it will remain competitive as a result. That's how important today was for Oscar.
How do you think McLaren are going to manage the situation?
With extreme difficulty, like every single team that have had two great drivers in the past. Zach took on Lando's career, right, and helped get him to McLaren before he was in charge of McLaren. Oscar has a brilliant management team around him. And funnily enough, the Webbers have a little bit of experience about being in a competitive environment when it comes to a number one and a number two driver. Amazing people to have in your corner. And the drivers, by the way, are awesome. Oscar has clearly taken another step, like he did first year into second, like he did second year into third. He's finding pace all the time. Lando is rapid. They've got a problem to manage. But you don't sign him up to a massive contract if you're expecting him to have to play a number two driver role.
No, I'm sorry. I was just waving at lovely Angela Cullen, who's just walked past. I'm so sorry. I was also listening, though. No, you don't want a situation in which you have two drivers who can win a world title and you put your entire faith in both drivers on a long-term deal to deliver you that success. But when you speak to Zach, he's talking all the time about the constructors. He's all the time talking, who are your biggest rivals in Japan? He isn't talking about Max or George. He's talking about Ferrari or Mercedes. And so the focus for that team seems to be on the constructors. So if they have two drivers who will take points from each other, but ultimately will outscore Ferrari and will outscore what is essentially, and for now, a one driver Red Bull and a one and a half driver Mercedes, then they're going to win the constructor standings, absolutely. But that does not help their problem with winning who wins the driver's title. It's just a fascinating thing to watch unfold. For me, having come into a, you know, the sport later and sort of being aware of the Lewis Hamilton versus Nico Rosberg thing, how much Mercedes allowed them to race and to duke it out on track and for it to be decided without team orders. Is that what we're going to see? Are we going to see this battle go down to the very last race between the two of them? How spicy will it get?
Well, Laura, it raises the question, how big an advantage do we think McLaren have at this stage of the season? Personally, I don't think we've seen the extent of their advantage. I think tyre wear is where they're absolutely brilliant, and the strength of the hard tyre in this race today meant there was no managing from anyone. But the moment we go to a racetrack, Suzuka is much more demanding on tyres. Bahrain, we saw in the test, demanding on. I think we're going to see the true extent of that advantage, which I expect to grow.
Yeah, I don't think we've seen the extent of other teams yet either, because we've had a very wet race in Melbourne in which we had limited to no dry running. We've then come here to a sprint weekend in which we've had just one Grand Prix distance to understand the hard tyre on a circuit that absolutely demolishes the front left. We're now going to Suzuka, another different track entirely. You look back to last season, and by race five we'd written it off and said that Red Bull were going to win the constructors and that Max Verstappen would sail away with the drivers. Yes, he won the drivers. He certainly didn't go unchallenged. That didn't happen. So I think it's really early doors to be sort of saying, right, McLaren have won this, absolutely. And I know we do have a situation this year where car development will be less, and we obviously have a nod to 26, and some teams won't really put their full emphasis into the gains for this season. But equally, McLaren's development will stop at some point, and there will be a convergence. So I'm still hoping we're going to get the tightest season that we were all anticipating.
Zach is a disruptor. He always has been. Just look at some of the things he comes out with in the media. So I think he will relish an intra-team battle between those two guys. And I think as long as the advantage is big enough in the constructors, he'll let them get on with it.
He's got no choice to let them get on with it. You can try managing them. How's that going to go down? We know that an order has gone down badly. Unless it makes sense to the driver, and there are certain circumstances where it would make sense. Oscar today has proven that if he can stick it ahead of Lando in a race, it's going to be extremely difficult given how closely matched they are. I know Lando had a brake problem later on, but I think for the first nine races of the year, before we get to Spain, before we get to that change in front wing deflection tests, until we get there, it's the McLaren show with Oscar and Lando, and I agree with you. We've not seen the extent of it. I think they're up the road at the moment.
I thought it was significant that Zach, in a lot of the pre-race TV footage, was standing next to Oscar's car. I think after the frustrations in Oscar's camp in Melbourne, I think he made a very public show of support to Oscar. But it's the start of that juggling act he's going to have to manage for the next 9 months, isn't it? Keeping both drivers happy.
We asked him about team orders and the fact that he didn't have to deliver any today because of that brake pedal issue meant they didn't ultimately come very close together towards the end. And Zach said, well, we did give them team orders and that was to go racing. And and you think, well, if that's your order, then we're in for an absolute treat this season if we're going to have two McLarens duking it out and two teammates turned rivals. I think it's going to be a fascinating one. But I would also love Ferrari to close that gap as well. As with Charles Leclerc, he was also on our show and he was really frustrated with where they're at. He says not in race pace, but in one lap pace, certainly here, that was proven to be the thorn in their side.
Well, look, we'll come on to Ferrari in a minute. Let's talk about the person that ran McLaren closest this weekend, and that was George Russell. He said after the race it was his best weekend in Formula One. What impressed you about him particularly?
He's relishing being team leader.
Yeah, he's come out of Lewis's shadow. That's obvious, isn't it?
His shoulders are back. He's photobombing the winner's photo on the main straight. He's chirpy on the radio. Brilliant performance to put it on the front row. McLaren really shouldn't have been beaten in that scenario to the front row. He knows that it's not a free hit, but he knows that they're slightly up the road at the moment. And I think he's enjoying just chipping away, trying to improve, very, very precise on the radio. Everyone else is speaking in code, plan A, plan B. It's turning into a one-stop. Bang. There's your communication. In qualifying, chill out. I'm your team leader. I will deliver the pace. He's running on confidence right now. And who can blame him? He's the team leader at Mercedes' Formula One team. He's grown into that role. He's driving the best he ever has, I think, as a genuine level. Difference is, and there is a key difference, between converting a third place where you should be third and stealing a win, stealing a second. That's the next thing for
him.
Well,
he stole a second on the grid.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, that's possible over one lap. He's just scooting past us as we're talking about him. Giving us a smile, perfect timing. That was so George, it was unbelievable.
Hello!
Shouting hello to us as he goes past. But yeah, he's in a great place. If the team can develop that car the right way, then he's gonna be in contention because he's running confident right now.
Jake C, in contention for what?
The driver's title, no? If Lando and Oscar take points from
each other. If you can keep yourself in the mix with consistent results and Lando and Oscar keep giving each other bloody noses and keep taking 7 points off each other all the time, there's an opportunity for someone to pick up the pieces. And they know it. George knows it. Max knows it. Eventually, gravity might get too much and they might... If McLaren keep winning every race, then bad luck. But the ninth race and the change of the regs effectively for the front wing there is key. And Max and George are just reveling in picking up the pieces, doing the best they can with the cars that they've got.
I'm interested that George said this was his best Formula One weekend to date. Because when you look back at Vegas last year, he was so dominant there. But dominant in a car that could only operate in a window that was presented at Vegas, cold conditions. And that car had such a limited operating window. It seems to me now that Mercedes is much better across the board, whether it's one lap, whether it's in cooler, warmer temperatures. It's been good in Bahrain. That may have... He's still scooting about. He's probably desperate to hear our conversation.
He's doing laps. We're being nice, George. We're being nice.
Honestly, it's all compliments. But that Mercedes now has been good in the heat and the wet of Australia. It's been good here. And George has absorbed so much of that pressure. You've got Zak Brown saying Max Verstappen is going to be at Mercedes next year. Well, for who? Because... You're talking about having Lando and Oscar as two number ones. You want George and Max as two number ones? That's a pretty astonishing lineup.
It's not a sensible lineup, is it?
I would love to see it.
It's just not. It's not going to work.
Beef.
Yeah,
I'm serious beef.
You know, if you go with a senior driver and a less experienced driver as a lineup, and so George absolutely had to absorb this pressure and come out, as Jakesy said, head held high, shoulders back, and he's doing just that. And it's mighty impressive. You know, he's had two podiums now in Grand Prix so far, and the car looks like it's in a good window. The team are operating really well, reacting really well to his instructions. He's working well with Kimi as well. There's clearly a good and respectful relationship there. as long as Kimi doesn't get too close. And, you know, who knows what may happen there. But, yeah, happy days at Mercedes, I'd say.
Yeah, and it is truly impressive how he's stepped up. I look at a lot of the drivers that are now the team leaders that weren't last year. You think of Pierre Gasly at Alpine, George at Mercedes. Well, in a funny kind of way, he stepped up last year, didn't he? When the writing was on the wall and Lewis was off to Ferrari, I think we saw a marked shift in his outlook. And that has now just gone up another level. Just he leads that team on track, off track. It's very impressive to see. In terms of the Constructors' Championship, you know, okay, Mercedes settle into second place in the Constructors, but they're already 25 points behind McLaren, a full race win already.
Yeah, and that shows you how good a job McLaren have done, and they've improved on last year when they were already world champions. That's impressive as well. First race in the drive for Kimi Antonelli. He enjoys the wet more. That was a pure instinct race, wasn't it, in Melbourne, in China. He's beginning to learn the ropes in the dry, and it's incredibly, incredibly difficult.
When we think of the rookies, you mentioned Kimi Antonelli. Do you think he's done the best of the rookies in the two races so far?
Yes, across the two races, I think he's done brilliantly. I think Isaac Hadjar bounced back really well. I thought he's, like, overall pace. I know they got the strategy wrong today, but, like, the overall pace from Hadjar, having... No one wants to build up their entire motor racing career, get to their first Grand Prix and stick it into the wall of the formation lap. He comes back, he speaks to you in the presser on Thursday and says, thank God it's a back-to-back. And then he delivers superb pace. Liam Lawson, last year, didn't out-qualify Yuki Tsunoda once. Hadjar, bang, straight in it, second race, out-qualified Yuki Tsunoda. Impressive. And the rest of them are learning on the job. I don't expect in the dry Kimi Antonelli to do anything like amazing like he did in his debut, until he gets halfway through the year. You've got to remember the level that we're at with Formula One. They've rushed him through. He's going to be learning on the job. And then second half of the season, then I think we'll see similar stuff to Melbourne.
And I've said it many times that I think George Russell is one of the most underrated drivers on the grid. Maybe because there's no fuss to him. There's no fanfare out of the car. But in the car, he's consistently quick time and time again.
I think that could be down to he's made some big key errors at really big moments where if he'd converted one or two of them, it could have been huge. Think, you know, crash at Singapore.
A couple of years ago, yeah.
There's been a certain moments where he's just cracked a little bit, maybe under pressure or just made a mistake. We're all human. And it's probably those that sit in the mind more than the really good P4s, P3s in a Mercedes that isn't performing. Now he's potentially got that car underneath him and that Mercedes can be competitive, then I think we may see the true potential of George and begin to appreciate that.
And I also think it's the fact that so many times last year when we saw him in the lead, he would lead the first stint of a race and then occasionally drop back, thinking about Canada, thinking about Silverstone. He's not doing that in the same way. He's clearly unlocked something with a complete race performance.
We'll continue with our review of the Chinese Grand Prix shortly. And then once you're done, why not check out Formula One's other official podcasts? On this week's F1 Beyond the Grid, Pierre Gasly tells me why he's confident Alpine will improve and be challenging for better positions very soon. And the latest F1 Explains is all about what happens when F1 drivers move teams, with Mercedes reserve driver Valtteri Bottas. Why not have a listen to those right after you finish listening to this episode of F1 Nation? Let's talk about Red Bull now, because Max Verstappen has been frustrated this weekend. He came out after qualifying and said, we have the fourth fastest car on the grid now. I think he's being harsh, but it is a very small window of performance in that car. That is clear. P4 in the Grand Prix was a good result. Given his pace at the end on the hard tyre, do you think there was any more in it?
No. I think he is performing wonders with that car. I think to get within 0.02 of a second of sprint pole was ludicrous. When you watch the onboard, he's hacking away at the steering wheel like an axe into chopping down a tree. Like he's having to use all of his brilliance to get a car into fourth place at the Grand Prix. It took him a long time. What was it, 20-odd laps until he started looking like Max Verstappen? He's having to be patient. He's having to try and use everything he's learned in his career to finish fourth. Frustration for him, but they have a chance now to go away, look at the data, and decide a development direction, because I think if they... I think he's right. I think that is the... I think the Ferrari has a really narrow operating window, but I think the Red Bull... I think the Red Bull is the fourth fastest car.
And he overtook Charles Leclerc, yes, but Charles Leclerc without an end plate. You know, yeah. Charles Leclerc with 20 to 30 points less of downforce. And so it was such a subdued performance today from Red Bull. You heard GP having to really G him up. So, you know, we can do this. That's it. It's coming to you now. You know, yes, we hear GP encouraging Max, but it's with a confidence and an air of dominance. It's never been for P5, P4. You know, there was a difference today in how they approached the race. And even Max himself saying, I'll only win if everyone retires in front of me. I know that may be a little bit of bravado to the press, a bit of a way to bat away the question, but there clearly is a lacking of confidence within that team in the car and what they have.
And I think Suzuka will be crucial for them, because traditionally that car has been very aero-efficient. Suzuka is a wonderful racetrack with lots of... You're shaking your head.
I got awful news for you, Tom. Our colleague and friend Jolyon Palmer has tipped Max Verstappen to return to form in Suzuka.
Return of the Max.
So that's the end of that.
We like Palmer to jinx drivers
instant
F1
Palmer.
TV.
I like what you've done there. But it will be a significant...
It's a huge test. Yeah. Because if they're not good there,
then
you start looking around the calendar and going, wow. And then it's a strange one, because he managed to keep himself afloat so brilliantly last year.
What about Liam Lawson then? It's been such a tough start for him. He is very open and honest in his appraisal of his own performance, saying it's just not good enough. Do you think the performance will come?
Yeah, it's a little bit uncomfortable for me. I've obviously covered his junior motor racing career. Straightforward guy, straight shooter. He objectively, I'm not being mean, I'm not being harsh, objectively, 11 Grand Prix starts is the least experienced and therefore qualified to ever be put alongside Max Verstappen. Okay? He wasn't with the front-running teams in his junior career, but he didn't finish in the major places on his way through the ladder. It's incredibly difficult to see why they've put Liam in this position in the first place. In my opinion, a guy who deserves a shot in Formula One has been advanced to a team where you are asking a driver to fix a Rubik's Cube of a car that Sergio Perez, tire whisperer, man who used to magic Force India to the podium out of thin air, man who went from the back of the grid to the win in Sakhir, couldn't figure out. Checo couldn't figure it out. Danny Ric didn't think he was going to beat Max, disappeared out of it. Okay, Alex Albon, pretty good against Carlos Sainz at the moment, isn't he? Proven Grand Prix winner. Was 4/10 of a second away? They would kill for 4/10 of a second away. It's been slightly incoherent in terms of who they've put in the second car for a long time, and Liam is taking the brunt of it. And it's not really Liam's fault. Will they give him time? I don't know, but it's a tough watch to see him.
I agree entirely. I think we do need to start asking questions about the culture around that Red Bull second seat. We all say it's the toughest seat. Why? It's clearly not the toughest seat. It's not this huge, tough ask. It's seemingly, as you said, an impossible conundrum to unpick, and one in which you have a car that's swayed, built, manufactured towards your four-time world champion. And understandably, you have a very clear number one driver, but then you have a number two seat in which nothing, in a sense, is engineered for you. You come into the team as the de facto number two, and that is it. And you have to fulfill that role. And you look at the likes of VCarb here. Is that VCarb quicker than the Red Bull right now?
It's easier to drive.
It's clearly got a wider window, hasn't it?
Exactly. And, you know, all right, rumours, of course, unsubstantiated, absolutely, but already rumours that Liam Lawson will be replaced by Yuki Tsunoda in as early as Japan, for goodness sake. But does Yuki Tsunoda want to be driving that Red Bull if it has such a narrow operating window? And I'm sure every driver up and down this grid will go, I can do a better job. And instead of perhaps blaming the drivers, as we tend to do, and go, the driver's not good enough, they've made a mistake here, made a mistake there, perhaps the questions also need to be around how that team operates, the car operates, and the culture of that second seat operates.
I want to say credit to Max Verstappen. Whilst we've been recording this, he's been talking to Liam over your shoulder, Tom. He was having a five-minute conversation with him. He's clearly lending support. They're clearly debriefing the race. Max needs someone alongside who can turn that into it. I mean, if you look at what McLaren have, if you look at what Ferrari have, if you look at what Mercedes will have, I believe, by the end of the year, and then suddenly you look at what Red Bull have, they're falling away, and we're talking about the fact that it's even a conversation. I don't think it's going to happen, but I think it's even a conversation. I think they've gone the wrong way with the driver choice.
You both make very valid points.
Yeah.
Who would you have put in that car at the start of this year if it wasn't going to be Liam Lawson?
Carlos Sainz. Sign Carlos Sainz, who was on the market. They had the option to do that. He's a proven Grand Prix winner. You know his data from the time when he was alongside Max Verstappen. He didn't beat Max Verstappen, and he didn't beat Charles Leclerc often, but he's a driver who would pick up the wins when it didn't go to plan. If Max Verstappen has contact with the driver at turn one, Carlos Sainz was capable of winning Grand Prix. They've looked internally, and I think they've got themselves in a massive tangle, and I don't think Liam Lawson deserves to take the brunt of what he's doing, which is he's an elite sportsman at the top of motor racing, and he's qualifying last. That is really tough.
Now, both Ferraris have been disqualified from the Chinese Grand Prix. Charles Leclerc for being underweight and Lewis Hamilton for plank wear. Obviously hugely frustrating for the team and the drivers in terms of the championship standings, because they will no longer get the points for finishing 5th and 6th as they did on the road. But I don't think this should take away from what has been a much, much better weekend for the Scuderia than Melbourne a week ago. Lewis Hamilton won the sprint from pole, and the car had genuine pace in Shanghai, not ultimate McLaren pace, but a huge step forward in the space of just 7 days, and that surely gives a lot of confidence.
Hamilton will write a new chapter, and this time it's written in red. Lewis Hamilton wins for Ferrari for the first time in Formula One. He's left them all behind. A winner now for McLaren, Mercedes, and now Ferrari in Formula One.
It's a P1, baby.
Great job, guys. Woo. Yes.
Frustrating end for Lewis Hamilton, getting disqualified from the race because his plank was too worn, something that we've seen before in Austin when he was at Mercedes. But what positives is he going to take from the weekend?
He's not going to love getting disqualified from sprint Grand Prix weekend races, because it happened in Austin and now it's happened in Shanghai. But he won. He took his opportunity to win early. That turned the page on a difficult Melbourne. He's won for three teams in Formula One. It's not a very long list, is it? McLaren, Mercedes and Ferrari. Pretty good. Miscalculation. They'll bounce back.
Lewis Hamilton in clean air waltzed away with a 7-second margin victory in that sprint race. Charles Leclerc was lapping fastest in the sprint race, but just unable to get the moves done and really struggling through, I think it was turn 12 or turn 13, just unable to
onto
get around
that straight.
Exactly, to get past George Russell. He said that again today, that he was struggling there in terms of compared to the speed of the Mercedes as well. I think there will be glimmers of hope here, but they're certainly not where they want to be.
Very unfortunate disqualification. I still feel Ferrari have a lot to be positive about. My question to you two now is, would you rather be driving a Ferrari or a Mercedes?
I'd rather have a Ferrari.
Sorry, I was really thinking about
Laura
it.
Laura was having a proper think, so I've covered.
It's interesting because what you have in Ferrari is Sir Lewis Hamilton, 7-time world champion, and Charles Leclerc, one of the quickest men over one lap. And then at Mercedes, you have George Russell, handful of Grand Prix wins, and an entirely green rookie in Kimi Antonelli. So it's difficult to understand the true extent of that Mercedes, perhaps. Is George wringing the neck of it? Or is where it's at somewhere in between Kimi and George? It's a long way of saying, don't know, but perhaps Mercedes?
I just think what's encouraging is that Lewis was able to extract a lap in sprint qualifying. That stage of the weekend, able to extract it. We know Charles is a genius in qualifying as well. As a result, given that in the last few races, pole position has been so key, that dirty air has become way more of a thing the more they've developed this rule set, I think there's a one-lap performance in that Ferrari which could circumvent some of the flaws in the cars. I think I'd still want the Ferrari at this stage.
But interestingly, Charles was saying to me on the post-show that, and on his side of the garage, yeah, clearly, they don't have the one-lap pace. That's what they need to work on.
They didn't have the one-lap pace here.
Yeah.
I'm absolutely no doubt in my mind that Leclerc will have the same pace as Lewis Hamilton, I think, longer term.
Yeah.
This is a very Lewis track, isn't it? Six poles, six
and it's
wins.
Front end. He loves a strong front end. It's made for him, this track.
When it's mechanical grip and it's Monaco and Baku, Charles Leclerc's going to be the favourite.
Yeah, Charles has been a step behind, hasn't he, Lewis, at this track. You're right. And I think we're already making these sort of grandiose claims and predictions. And we forget two races in in which it was filthy wet in Melbourne on race day, very limited learnings, and then sprint weekend. So similarly, not much learning either.
I liked his answer to you in the presser after he'd taken the win about he turned up to Australia willing to learn, see how they did it. Didn't exactly like what he saw. Turned up to China with a list and he's like, this is what we're going to address at the start. That was a step forward. The car responded to how he started the weekend. Signs of hope, but McLaren are still out front.
This is a nice segue into a Beyond the Grid that I'm doing. It's going to be out in a couple of weeks with Marc Genet. I spoke to him here as the wind is really picking up here in the paddock. We're probably going to get wet quite soon. But he said one of the things that Ferrari is really good at is listening to their drivers. And when a new driver comes into the team, looking after them, making them feel loved, answering their queries. And I've been really impressed with how Lewis has settled into Ferrari so quickly. Okay, there's still more performance to come, but he feels like he's been there a lot longer than 3.5 months. It feels like the way he's established within that team has happened far quicker than I think it might have done at other teams. Just because Ferrari is very, very good at bedding drivers in.
I guess also there's an ongoing and a historic relationship with Fred Vasseur as well. So the team are going to be really open to Lewis Hamilton and his feedback and his suggestions, because Fred Vasseur will be. There is a relationship there that goes back years and will now go forward years. I guess they both hope as well.
Two more teams I wanted to ask you about. Let's start with Haas. Huge weekend
amazing
for them after what happened in Melbourne. Both cars in the top 10. What's the secret?
They switched on the lights this week. That was nice. I mean, I felt for them. Hayao Komatsu, he conducts himself so well. They turn up from Bahrain testing. They find a performance problem that they didn't know they were going to have. No panic, no drama. Esteban Ocon said to you, didn't he, on the post-race show on F1 TV, they didn't do a lot of sleeping, they didn't do a lot of eating, they did a lot of work in the last week. And then the fact that they're able to solve the problem and get both cars into the points, that is a ringing endorsement of the leadership of that team and how they responded from a pretty embarrassing race one.
Strategy-wise as well, of course, they both opted for the one start. They had a decent start for Behrmann on that hard tyre to know it worked, but then he managed a medium tyre for nearly 30 laps to bring it home. He had a couple of chows on the way to to a few drivers as he passed them, which...
He's going
to
be getting that back.
I absolutely
They'll watch that back. He's going to be getting chows back whether he gets overtaken.
Honestly, I really enjoyed that. He did say he felt a little bit bad. Once the adrenaline was gone and the heat of the moment was over, he probably looks back and goes, okay, that was a bit much, actually, for P10. But no, delighted for them. Double points for Haas. And I think it's funny because we saw how they were in testing, not really running a program where we could see the extent of the car. And we're thinking, well, they'll come out swinging in Australia. And then they were just nowhere in Australia. And so it's great in terms of that midfield battle that we now have another team that's entered that Q3 chat and another team that is going to be knocking on the door for points. Let's not forget that VCAR committed way too soon to a two-stop and then had a front wing failure on a new front wing for Yuki, where it just literally... you know, he had to be pitted for a third time. They didn't get that right, and that they may have been up there as well had they got that right. But Haas got it right and clearly have turned a bit of a corner.
Well, the car was bouncing a lot in Melbourne, wasn't it? And I'm sure that the resurfaced track here in Shanghai, which is billiard smooth, will have helped them lower the ride height and get more performance from the car. So they'll be looking at all the racetracks that are really smooth. I think that's probably where they're going to go particularly well this year. But you've got to get it right on the day. It's all about getting it right when it counts. Can we talk about Behrmann? I know Behrmann was too busy saying ciao, but actually, this was a great comeback by him, because people have said to me, would you rather have had Isaac Hadjar's Australian Grand Prix or Ollie Behrmann's? And I would have taken Isaac Hadjar's every day of the week, because I thought he'd had a brilliant Friday and Saturday, whereas Ollie was uncharacteristic in the mistakes he was making in Melbourne, and I thought he's come back this weekend and been really, really impressive.
Albert Park is really quick these days. It is a really quick circuit when you've barely had any starts in Formula One, especially the high-speed chicane. I think to then roll out the pits and stick it in the gravel at Turn 11 would have been like all these nightmares come true. I love the confidence with the dive bomb moves at Turn 14. I loved a little bit of confidence on the radio with Chow. He's not been blown off course. And I think the same applies to Isaac as well. He wasn't blown off course either. So the rookies are resilient, and they need to be.
I think Ollie completing the Australian Grand Prix in what were absolutely torrid conditions that even saw the likes of Fernando Alonso and Carlos Sainz crashing out, I think that was really important for his weekend. And I saw him come out the garage just after, and he smiled at me and said hello. And I thought, that's not the sign of a man who's had a really bad weekend. Actually, I think that's the sign of a man who's really happy to have finished this Grand Prix, got some really useful data under his belt, under the team's belt. I think if he crashed again on that Sunday, we may not have seen quite the confidence we have today. But he knows he can get the job done, and he can get it done on the toughest of tracks. Jeddah, Baku, really tough tracks. And that's what kind of surprised me in a way about Australia and about the mistakes he was making. But I think important for him today to get a point for Haas, now officially in his first full-time season. And the only way is up.
Look, we've already talked about Alex Albon and what a great job he's doing for Williams. And this was another example of that this weekend, in the points again, second race in a row. So the big question about Williams for me is Carlos Sainz. What's going on there? We saw an uncharacteristic mistake in Melbourne. Okay, there was a torque surge, fine. But he was never on the same pace as Albon here at a more conventional racetrack in conventional conditions. What have we learned about his struggles?
I don't think he knows how to manipulate the car yet. I think he was open in testing with saying it's going to take a while. I think it is going to take a few races. I don't think he knows how to get a tune out of that car yet. And until he does, Alex Albon's going to put away every opportunity he's given. He's so motivated by Carlos turning up. He's the least Alex Albon version of himself I've seen since he's come through. He's shoulders back, confident, wild eyes. He is really determined to take this chance. And I think Carlos is going to need maybe six races to understand, okay, that setup change does this. Alex has all of that knowledge. Oh, we're going to do a roll bar change. What's it going to do? Alex Albon already knows. Don't try that. Inherently, that doesn't work with our setup. Carlos Sainz needs to discover all of that. And until he does, I think he's going to be the second Williams.
That radio from Alex, leave me to it. I am good. I am the best. I am doing the best.
I think he meant
in terms of the tyres.
Of his gaggle. But I love the idea that he's gone. Oh, my word.
I
wish I was in McLaren today. I'm unbelievable.
But no, I've got this. I am comfortable. Leave me to it, in a sense. There is this confidence. But you're right. I think that Williams camp, Alex Albon's camp, have turned themselves inside out over the winter to extract absolutely every ounce of performance. And they had to. They had to stand up to a proven multiple race winner coming into the team. He had to show that he wasn't going to suddenly defer as a number two driver. They looked at everything from nutrition, from car setup, from communication with the engineer, from training, from strength. Absolutely everything has been looked at. And all those little 1% have been added up. And I think that's what we're seeing is a kind of Alex Albon 2.0. And it's paying off. They've worked so, so hard in that camp.
Really good point. There's an edge to him.
Yeah, I like it.
And maybe there needed to be, and he's never quite had to show it when he's had a Latifi, a Sargeant alongside him. He had a Colapinto last year who suddenly began to edge ahead of him, and perhaps maybe that was a bit of a wake-up call he needed. They then signed Carlos Sainz, and the step had to be big, and he's making it.
So if you're Carlos Sainz, what positives are you taking from Shanghai?
The positives are, if you're Carlos Sainz, you're a really smart driver. You don't panic, you got great hair, and you know how to figure out how to win with a Formula One car. He's so methodical, he will understand that he will do the due diligence, he's pushing that team, he will eventually unlock it. There's no panic for him at all. It's just he's switching from Ferrari to Williams. I'm not sure there's a bigger cultural shift in the paddock, to be honest. You got one team that's trying to modernize themselves, one behemoth and Formula One's most famous team. He will be okay, but I think the first six races is going to be hard to be ahead of Alex, because Alex has been there, he's part of the furniture. He knows what buttons to press, he knows what to try, and crucially, and I think this is vital, especially in a sprint weekend, he knows what avenues not to go down. He knows what isn't going to be effective, he knows where to start. And until Carlos knows what is the top three list to address on that car, he will be, I think, the second winner.
Psychologically, how difficult was it for Carlos to watch Lewis Hamilton winning that sprint in what he probably thinks is his car at some level?
Interesting. I hadn't thought of it, actually.
No.
I hadn't thought about it. And I maybe because I just... You presume, perhaps, that Carlos is now so focused on what he is doing with Williams. But I'm sure there was... It would have smarted a little bit. It's like seeing your ex with someone else, isn't it? Basically. The thing Carlos can take from this weekend is he has a full race distance under his belt in a sprint weekend. I'll keep saying it, but we have not learned everything we can from the last two weekends. We've had a really wet weekend and we've had a sprint weekend. There's still so much more to learn from these cars. There's still so much more that I'm sure they will develop outside of long flyaways. I think Carlos now has a race distance under his belt across multiple compounds, and he will get into the swing of things.
Guys, it's been a brilliant debrief. Thank you for your time. I can't let you go without asking you for your driver of the day. Kimi Antonelli got it on the telly. Do we agree with that, or are you going to choose someone else?
I think I'll choose someone else. It was a relatively quiet race for Kimi Antonelli, but I really appreciate the fans doing what the fans are going to do. And look, he best performing rookie for second weekend in a row in the points once again. He is getting the job done. I don't think you can look much past Oscar Piastri, though, for driver of the day. The response to what happened in Australia, the heartbreak and the anger at the team orders message, for him to come back here, first pole position, pretty much lights the flag victory in terms of he was fully in control of the race from lights out. It's got to be Oscar Piastri for me.
Clearly Kimi Antonelli got the job done. I love that he's got the support already in race number two. That's so nice. For me, Ollie Bearman. Could have wilted seven places up in a Haas. Nicely done. Could have been his teammate Esteban Ocon. We've already spoken about Oscar and Laura's already picked him. So I'm going to go for Ollie Bearman.
Ciao.
Both great choices. Just to give someone else... I'm actually going to go for George Russell. I think
he was my second choice.
Yeah, maybe driver of the day, but I'm going to expand it to driver of the weekend. I mean, Oscar brilliant, obviously, but George is just extracting the maximum from that thing, lap after lap. He's stepped up in the team leader role. I am just incredibly impressed by him.
There's an aura, isn't there, around George?
There's something assured about him. It feels like he's been here a long time when he actually hasn't. And I think if the opportunity were to present itself, that, you know, a championship challenge, I think he's turned the corner. Those mistakes that we talked about earlier in the pod, I think now are a thing of the past. He's not making mistakes. So there, he's my choice. Laura, one final thing. As my deputy team principal
Absolutely.
In F1
Reporting
Fantasy.
For duty.
Yes, thank you for turning up. Do you know what? We've now got more than 120,000 teams in the F1 Nation
Mega.
World Championship.
Alex Shakes does not have one of those teams. He's opted not to take part this season.
As a lead commentator, remaining unbiased is absolutely vital. Also, the idea of losing to Laura.
Oh, my
I think we
word.
Got to the bottom of it right there.
Everyone else has heard about it so much. You know bad losers? No. Last year, bad winner.
Bad I was a winner. Terrible winner.
Gloaty.
It was less gloaty, more just I was so neurotically anxious about winning. I took it far too seriously, and it did impact my broadcasting ability. Because when you see a driver crash, you don't feel, oh no, they've crashed. I'm like, for God's sake, you're in my team. Why have you crashed? I'm trying to do it for fun this year. Saying that, I went really big and I played my limitless chip because I feel it was a weekend in which we could really clearly see a pecking order. And so I played the limitless chip and I put in the absolute dream team of Piastri, Norris, Leclerc, Hamilton and Verstappen, McLaren and Ferrari, and I scored 320 points with a double DRS boost on Oscar Piastri. I'm really trying to just have a lot of fun with it though.
Yeah, no. Giggles all the way.
That, Laura, is why you are deputy team principal of our F1 Fantasy League. We did have Lewis Hamilton in our team.
Hang on. If Ferrari have their two drivers disqualified, this is a terrible team.
Do you get minus points? What happens?
You get minus points. Oh, mon dieu, this is going to be awful. This is a disaster for me.
Well, that's it from us. Thank you very much to Laura and to Alex for joining us. And you can relive the race with highlights on F1 TV, the F1 YouTube channel, and read more from the drivers on F1.com. And don't forget to check out F1 Beyond the Grid with Pierre Gasly this week, and F1 Explains with Valtteri Bottas. And F1 Nation will be back next week to look ahead to the third race of the season, the Japanese Grand Prix at the glorious Suzuka Circuit. Thanks very much for listening. F1 Nation is produced by Formula One and Audioboom Studios.